The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Pillow Chronicles. In your face and on the air. And that's just the way it should be.
1, 2, 3, hit it!
Pop rock the show.
Time to lay down some serious sound.
Here we go again.
Cthulhu, Cthulhu.
Shake that thing.
Good God!
Work it. Work it. Shake that thing.
Cthulhu, Cthulhu.
Cthulhu Chronicles.
That's Cthulhu over there. You know what I mean?
Presto! Digitation! Through hell and high water, here we go! Auto broadcasting now on the air! Postmodernists, welcome to the depths of February. You snow burnt. Can it be snow burnt? Are you snowbound, sickle men? Come hither from the ferry and be merry. Make holiday. Here we go again. Wake up! It's night, everyone. And as dark as it gets. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. You're in the tunnel. My name is Frank Cthulhu. Man, his name knows the title of the show. Let's go! Ice cap to ice cap from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. It is once again time for you and I to get together live here, Y2K plus 13, February 7th. We're on that 7 day, well, a 7 per day. That week, the thing that falls on 7, so it's 7. Next week we'll be here, 14th, that's Valentine's Day. 21 on the 21st, still not promising, but very sure that Tom Savino will be here on Cthulhu Chronicles to be on the radio for the first time with me in many, 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 many years. How many minis do you want for that one? Like anybody out there even remembers. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like the Sunshine Boys. They might call us the Sunshine Boys. We're almost, no, we're not that old yet, but this is my first radio partner. Why is it so many people start off with partners? George Carlin started off with a partner and a team. And recently, I forgot who they were talking about. Another someone that everybody knows as a single was a, I don't know. It happens a lot. And so it did with us, although we're nowhere near as popular as some of those people, if not all of those people. What do I mean, some? Well, you know, out there, you don't see many comedy duos anymore. I love to see comedy duos. Every once in a while, there were these two brothers. I don't know their names. I don't remember them. Just came to mind right now. The last time I saw a comedy team, and then it was just, no, that's not the last time. There was another one after that. Two guys, one played the guitar, the other one played something else, and they did, you know. And it's wonderful to see comedy teams because the timing and the setup and the joke, it's a classic type thing. And so anyway, that's the 21st. Today's the 7th as I speak, although you'll be listening to it many, many other times. Don't forget, twice a day, I believe, over at TrueTalkRadio.net. Boy, I'm telling you, are we ever on all the time? That's great. People listening, we love you. Thank you for listening. Right into the station. Send the money and gifts and things because they keep it going somehow. I don't know how. Independent radio, alternative broadcasting is a fantabulous thing. Also, well, what else? I don't know what else. There's plenty else. I got Dr. Gary Popoli makes his house call this show, and he's here for the, I think, the second time. I don't remember. I'm not keeping track already of this year. Da-dum, you have mail. Remember that stupid thing? You have mail. Let's turn it off. I don't want to hear that stuff anymore. Where is it? What does it say? Oh, you're right. Okay, fine. You're getting, nobody email me anymore because that's off. That's out. I don't hear that thing in the background. I'll tell you what I was thinking about, though, especially, well, before, which is one of the reasons I played the hardly ever played Afro Man track in that collage. Because I was thinking about a time, and I wanted to talk. I told Dr. Popoli when I talked to him during the week, I said, you know what would be a good topic if we talked about getting high at any given age that people want to do this. And now, with meds available and prescribed, and the amazing control that the pharmaceutical market has over generic, I guess they, no, they're not generic, they're specific illnesses, but, and they're called illnesses, but, you know, ADHD, HDHD, and ADD, and of course depression, and stuff like that. Those kind of things, and people are able to get, the kind of stuff that, you know, they get high. They get well. And getting well is getting high. That's what I want to talk about to Dr. Popoli, because recently I was thinking about a time when I worked in a specific place at a specific time, and I was actually had quite a responsibility. I was producing a radio show, a syndicated radio show. Now, by producing, when I say producing, I mean that I was responsible. And I was more than a producer, because I have many hats on this. I was producing it. I was setting up the music. Someone else was writing the playlist, and they were doing it. And we had this. Then had one of these giant boards. This is way before digital, and we had all the, you know, the tweaking and the dBs and the stuff and the BBs and the EBGBs and the stuff. Well, that's what I'm talking about. See, we had this oscillator, and I don't even know what an oscillator does. We just watched it because it made great designs. We weren't, because me, I say we, because I had this one assistant. And we did everything. We produced we put the songs in there. We made this big tape. At the time, it was tape. We had to tape things, okay? There's no digital junk. We had to tape it on physically analog tape. But it was very sophisticated equipment during this time. And we had to run this bed, make this giant music bed, and then I had to write all the things that were going to be said when the talent came in. This was a gigantic thing, and it was 3 hours a week. Now the work of it, the show was 3 hours a week. But here's the deal: it was a strange time in the world. This is one of my Hollywood adventures. I lived in Hollywood. It was a strange time in my life, and in that particular business, which was considered high powered, high energy, high. High. It was high. Everything was high. Everybody was high. Everything was high. It was all high all the time. And I'm trying to remember how I maintained doing the work that I did while high. I was high a lot. I mean, during one day, there's a lot of pressure because this is not the only thing I was working on. This was one thing, and I was responsible totally for this show. This is one thing. I was also writing for another show, for two other shows, and I was doing all sorts of voiceovers and stuff. I was really busy during a week. I was doing a lot of stuff. Yes, granted, I was getting paid well, but that's not the point. The point is, I was doing all this stuff, and most of it, I was doing it high. Now, in the Afro Man song, he talks about all the things that he can't do, and he didn't do, because the excuse was to get high. But I was doing it high. I was high, did my work and did it high. And I think that's a testimony to something. Isn't it? Isn't it? I don't know. It's a testimony to me. It's stupid. It was really stupid. Because on top of the high, there's the coffee, and at that time, the cigarettes. There was this input of stimulation, which is odd, because the name of the company was Audio Stimulation, and we were just rattled every day, riveted and rattled. And, you know, because getting high doesn't necessarily mean the floating away cool guy like, hey, man, ooh, you know. When you're, it means you have to do things and you have to perceive specifics while having this deficiency of understanding specifics. There's a whole different spatial conception, consciousness, let's say. There's a different spatial consciousness. There's a different timing. And yet, everything we were doing had to do with timing. And this is not an endorsement. People shouldn't get high while they work and use machinery and do things. I'm not endorsing this. I'm amazed is what I am. I am absolutely amazed that I was able to meet every deadline, to not screw up entirely, and to actually have extra fun while doing it. I am not going to lie to you about the fact that I know it wasn't good. We were younger anyway, a lot of us. All of us. A lot of us. Some of you people talk and listening to me now weren't even born when this stuff was going on. And I'm amazed at how I got through this. Now you say, like, first of all, you got to understand that in the industry of this, and everyone was high. So it wasn't like, it was second nature. People were taking out cigarettes and packs of cigarettes and smoking cigarettes, and there was nothing to that. In those days, everybody smoked. Had to find a no smoking zone or place was, you know, that not like today. Okay, so that was accepted. But in this particular industry, in this particular area of entertainment, I'm speaking because of some areas, I guess, were a little bit more lax, but there was nothing lax about it. It was everybody was high. So how could you not be high? In fact, I remember when I was one of the first people to stop getting high. I was one of them. Everybody was doing it, but I stopped getting high. And you know what I'm talking about? And it was like I was the weird one when that happened. When I decided to take it easy, I was weird because everybody kept going. So they looked at me like I was strange. But what I'm saying is, so there was nothing I could get paid and to have this high power job. Everybody knew it. I could do it in front of everybody because everybody else was doing it. And I'm talking about all the time. Do you know that after a day's work, and many, many hours in a day, I would go home to my apartment, have some dinner, or sometimes I'd go out, have dinner, come back to my apartment, and to relax, to sit down in those days, we were fortunate. We were some of the first people to have those big video machines. You're saying, what is a video machine? These were gigantic VHS machines. I mean, huge things. They cost like $800 to put, you know, put one videotape in to watch it off your TV. Cable TV was brand new. So we would go home and we'd have dinner, have coffee, and there's another half a pack of cigarettes right there. And we'd kind of come down a bit from being high all day. And of course, the ears, my head pounding because I had headphones on all day with music going through it. And I'm looking at oscillators that turned the lights off. Just, it was like one gigantic, weird trip. Go home, relax, maybe make some more coffee. Maybe have a little aperitif, cognac, something. And then you know what we'd do? Put on a video of a movie and get high. So it was all different vibe, as I used to call it. It wasn't like getting high while working. This was getting high relaxing. And it was never relaxing to me. That's one thing about the highs I'm talking about. When I was always high, it wasn't relaxing. It was encouraging. And it kept me going, and it helped me. Well, it didn't help me do anything. Actually, it didn't help. I could have done all that stuff while not high, but I was high, and it was absolutely ridiculous. And I don't know what to say about it. But I was thinking the other day, and now I'm thinking, because I know people still get high in so many different ways, but many people get high off of normal pills that are, you know, drugs. They're drugs. I take meds for certain things, and other people take meds, and you get a buzz, you get high, and it makes you feel okay. And that's exactly what happened. You know, it was in vogue back then to do drugs and stuff, but it was also, what was it? Why was it different? Well, it was different because it was still illegal, and it was no matter what. And you did have to handle, these days, the kind of stuff they give you is very good, and you're very responsible. It's not like you don't just, you know, you don't walk around floating. But I'm just saying, here's what I'm saying. I'm saying, I can't believe, so we're going to talk about getting high and finding a spot where you feel life is tolerable, where you feel, and that's why people get high. Just getting happy. Feeling good, because there's so many things to not feel. So many things to feel. I was going to say unwell. Is that okay? I'm asking the invisible English teacher next to me. Is that okay? See that? To be well, not well. To be unwell. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't think. I think part of it's youth, and the other part's stupidity. It's crazy. I do remember a lot of it. So that's, you know, okay. But I just can't, I got to get it through your skull here now. It was like breakfast, lunch, and dinner was high. And the spaces in between that you came down, that you weren't high, you realize you weren't high. Well, that's when you realize you had to get high again. And doing all this incredible work. I'm not patting myself on the back for that. I'm just saying, what luck. I mean, it must be tons of people who collapse at, although there must have been something chemically agreeable that allowed me to do that. And, or it made me feel better, so I was able to perform. Lord knows what that stuff would have sounded like and what have you. I used to write the stuff that was on that show high. Now, sometimes that would show, because if I, on a day when I didn't go home to relax, so I had to go home and write a show for the next day or something, it would be work, 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 work. So I'd get home, sit down at the typewriter. You know about typewriters? Electric typewriter? A huge IBM typewriter I had. It sat on the return of a desk. I mean, huge. This thing was so heavy. But it had a great touch to it. Although a lot of you people don't even know what I'm talking about. You see them in movies or what have you. But and the other day I was watching a movie, and it was called Broken Flowers, and they kept mentioning finding a typewriter in it. Somebody wanted a typewriter to do some writing. Wow, and I suddenly thought, wow, there was something special about that whole experience. Even though you couldn't wipe out words and make things go as smoothly as you do with anything digital. But the typing, the moving, the sound, that sound, it was all part of the writing experience. I think that little theater of sound and feel and touch, sensation, I think that really affected the copy. And today, all you hear is, hear that? That'd be the click of your keyboard, which is nothing compared to the clickety-clack of a typewriter. I learned to write on an Underwood. This is like a classic Underwood. This is one of those things. It's like, you know what it is? It's like the big, ever see the movie Misery? Ever see the typewriter that James Caan kills Kathy Bates' character with this gigantic thing? I mean, it's like wrought iron. I think that's what it's called. Wrought iron. Well, it sounds heavy, doesn't it? Wrought iron. But anyway, I'd go home when I had to. I was high. I had dinner, come down a little bit, time to write, and get high again. It's fascinating. I'm amazed at the ability. I think a lot of it has to do with youth. Maybe Dr. Gary Popoli, to you, will tell us more about that. Of course, he's also been looking, as he does all the time, some amazing studies that go on out there. And we learn an awful lot from the doctor who's a professor at five universities and the coordinator of the International Behavioral Science Think Tank in Warsaw, Poland. I made that up. Because I got high. But, you know, when I started this show, and I mean started, not this show, but I mean this entire series, I went back God knows how many years now. I mean, nobody's been counting. People heard me when broadband was, you know, new. And people said, you got to hear this guy, he's high. You got to hear this guy, he's just high. He talks for 2 hours, he's high. And it's not high. It's not high. Like, I could say it's high, you know, but coffee can, you know, give you a buzz. And you can do a lot of that stuff. Anyway, where was I? I was talking about Dr. Popoli. Yes, I was lying about Dr. Popoli. He'll tell you again where he's from and what have you. But my name is Frank Cotolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of the show. This is Cotolo Chronicles Y2K plus 13. Yikes. And we're heading towards the middle of February already. Isn't that amazing? I think it's amazing. I'm just fascinated at how this year is flying by. What else do we have? I think we have this. Let's see if we can do this. Where's this other thing? I promised I would do this because he's a good guy and everything here. Let's do this right now, okay? How about this?
Jiggy Jaguar from the Jiggy Jaguar Radio Show each and every day on TalkRadioX.com as well as JiggyJaguar.com. It's 4 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Pacific, and 5 p.m. Eastern. Two solid hours. We've got guests. We've got regular contributors. And we do it all each and every day from JiggyJaguar.com. Follow me on Twitter at JiggyJaguar. Thanks for the fish.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
I'm on Amazon. That's an amazing thing. I'm on Amazon. Who'd have thunk I'd be on Amazon? I remember my father used to call these women, either girls or women, who were really tall. And not that they were manlike. They weren't. They were feminine, but they were really tall. He used to call them Amazons. And it beats the heck out of me. Why? Let's try this new, wonderful new setup that Dr. Popoli has, as we call him. At his special desk side, where he probably has tons of books, where he has a terrific painting of, I know he has a painting of Sigmund Freud behind him. Is it working? And we're talking to him. Is it working? And I hope he didn't. I hope he did not. He has a new setup. And, you know, when you talk about somebody who's not very, look at it, it says Gary Pope, Dr. Popoli, but there's no talking. This new setup he has. Got a friend who's on Skype? No problem. It says, yeah, well, I've got a guest that's on Skype, and there is a problem. How do we do this again? Let's call it again. Let's call him again, okay? Duration was 39. Let's call him again. Here we go. We're calling, and we're hoping that he's here. Is that him? Dr. Popoli, good evening. Good evening. He might be hearing me and I'm not hearing him. You take a microphone, you stick it in the input thing. I mean, what is the problem with this? It shouldn't be. And I know what you're saying. You're saying, yeah, and he's saying, man, we should have tested this. But I couldn't. I wasn't around. And here I am now trying to get Dr. Popoli on my show. And for some reason or another, he's hooked in, but I can't hear him. Call quality information. Can you hear me? Dr. Popoli. Pakalafaka. Dr. Popoli. This is, huh? What are we going to have to do? Where's all my phones? I don't even have my phones here. Every one of my phones is gone. You can do it again by phone. What should we do, Dr. Popoli? 57 minutes into here. My name is Frank Cotolo. My man's name is the title of the show. This is Cotolo Chronicles. Dr. Popoli is supposed to be our guest. I'm going to try and get him on. I don't know why we don't hear him. Let's see. Mute your microphone? No. What is this? Add, send, or share? No. End call? No. What's this? Hide contacts? No. Let me hang up here again and see if and call him here. It's, talk to him here. Are you there? Are you there? You know what you could do here with this wonderful Skype thing, and you know they keep asking me to upgrade this, not to buy it, but to upgrade. There are new versions, and I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But Dr. Popoli is still on. He's still on. Let's see. You look for the little heart there. Maybe he thought no. He don't know. Yes. Are you there? Yes. Well, where are you? Let's see. Let's see if this. Did you hear me? Did you? Some people who say what they're typing while they type. Well, that's because you can't see that. Did you hear me? What? Where are you? Ah, here he comes. Let's see. Hello, Dr. Popoli. Now he has a problem. You definitely have a problem, Dr. Popoli, because there's no Dr. Popoli being heard here. Let's see. No, we can't hear you. There's no sound. You know what it must be? Right, could be his microphone. There's no sound. He's talking, but there's no sound. If you hear me, you got a problem because there's no. Let's show the IM here. Okay, can't hear you. Can't hear you. This is terrible that these things happen while you know you're on the air. But this is live radio. And this is what happens when you deal with... You know, Gary is so smart, but he's one of those professors. I think I once told you about Dr. Henry, my physics professor, who knew he could write equations, physics equations. Oh, uh-oh. Internet connection problem. There's a problem with the internet connection. Hold on while we try to get the call back. Yeah, why don't we just hang up and start again? Call mobile? What's this call mobile? Now he's got a call mobile. Oh, no, you can't do that because it says buy a subscription. What the hell's going on with this darn thing? What's going on with this Skype? Oh, great. Now there's my phone ringing up there. Hold on there, everybody. Hey, listen. Hold on there. Okay, hold on. We're going to get the phone. Hold on. Hold on there. Doctor? Is this the doctor? Yeah, I know you got a little problem there. Do we have to use the phone here? Because I can't hear. Huh? What? What? Yeah. Okay. Okay, try that. Okay. Okay, you reboot, and I'll stay right here and do the show while I'm waiting. Okay. I can't hear you. Did you hear me? Huh, that's very strange. Okay. Okay, probably your microphone because you're talking into that. Yes. Okay, go ahead. Reboot. See what happens. Okay. Oh, you want... Okay. Okay. Okay, you do that. Okay. Okay, I'm going to hang up here now, though. Okay. This is... Don't you love this? And then for some reason or another, I have two carriages and one of them's, you know, on the second story. Why do they call them the stories? I don't know. Oh, boy. So just in case, let's see what we're doing here. Ay, ay, ay. So let's go on now with he thinks if he reboots, you know, anytime you call the support for anything, what's the first thing they tell you when you got a problem? Can you reboot your, please? And I'm not saying that to make fun of people who speak like that, because I can't, I only know a little bit of that, other languages, you know. But that's what you get, because all the centers of support are in places that are foreign to the United States. Remember, you know, you call people foreigners, but that's, you know, they're not. They're foreign to you, But, you know, we're foreigners to, like, people in Spain. You know, you go to Spain, you walk around, you go into a Barcelona cafe and you ask for something, and they're like, you know, and they're speaking Spanish. You're a foreigner. Did I tell you? Yes, I had my coffee. Replenish your precious bodily fluids as we go along. We're going to fix Dr. Popoli. If he's not fixed with this, if his Skype isn't fixed and his microphone is screwed up, we can do this by ordinary telephone, by the speaker. We can put the speaker on, and we can get that rolling. It's the way it goes here now. Even with this high-tech equipment, we have all these problems. But, you know, Gary goes back, like I do, to the analog days. He's an old hoot. I'm not an old hoot, mind you. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. What else? Have you gone over to... I told you what happened with Facebook, huh? Facebook, that weird thing that was going on. I can't go... I can't even respond to people who want to be my friends because they banned me for 2 weeks for being... And, you know, it's funny. I didn't ask anybody who wasn't my friend to be my friend. But other people were asking me, and I think they were scam people, because I let everybody in, and then I get the scammers, I catch them with their pants down, I throw them out or whatever, you know, and then they leave me or whatever. I know the ropes. You've heard this show. If you've heard the show over the years, I've read to you. I mean, all the correspondence that we've done to bother the people who bother us. Anyway, all this stuff happens, and then I get knocked off for 2 weeks. Not that. So if you're trying to be my friend, you're going to have a problem on Facebook. But I think you could go see what you can see on the main window, right? Can't you do that without being a friend? You just can't see the main. I don't know how that works anymore. I have no idea what happened with it. And you know, the other thing is it's on MySpace, which, thanks to the artist D, I was invited to come back to MySpace. But this is weird. MySpace only works with Google Chrome. That's your browser. You can't use the new MySpace, owned by Justin Timberlake and a bunch of other people who have a lot of money, who I have no idea who are these people. And you can't go unless you use Google Chrome as your browser. So a lot of stuff is going on out there. And my, you know, Internet Internet Explorer? You know, I'm trying to think of what was the first one, because that's not what I had. Internet Explorer came later. In the beginning, when there was Netscape. Remember Netscape? Is Netscape still around as a browser? Netscape was the original browser I had when this whole thing broke open in terms of Windows on PCs. Because I used to have a Mac and connect before there was any, you know, when there was just AOL, and you used to connect into these chat rooms and talk to people and transfer, that's that protocol, right, to transfer files and stuff back then with the little... I don't know what, it wasn't even a font. It was those little computer dot words, letters. Man, those weird things on my Macintosh. And so I automatically looked to the side of the room where it used to sit on a little desk. I don't know if it was that same desk as I had over there. That desk has moved around a number of places in this room. And it was over there, and I looked out the window, and it was connected to that. Was when the kid room. Oh, he's Gary Popoli. He's now online. You know that? Remember the modem sound? Is that a bad imitation or a good imitation? Why would I make a sound like that? Because I'm high. I hope we get Gary. One way or another, we're going to get Gary on here. Here he comes. Let's see if it works. Okay, Mr. Popoli, this works now, right? No. No, Mr. Popoli, it's over. It's all over, Mr. Popoli. Your microphone is either in the wrong plug. Is it in your input there? It's either in the wrong plug or it's broken. You only have one little microphone? Not working, bud. Not working. You know what this means? This means we're going to probably have to get you by phone. Not working. W-O-R-K-I. And, gee, I wish it sounded like that typewriter. Oh, did it not even work? Did I have here? Oh. Well, oh, I see here. Not working. How come it didn't show there? N-O-T. Working. W-O. Look at that little. It's feeble. Where does this go if it doesn't go? Oh, there it is. Not working. Not working. It's so feeble. The sound of this keyboard compared to one of those big metal typewriters. Here's what I feel. And this might be totally imagined. I mean, totally miscalculated. But I feel like if I had one of those typewriters right now that I could write the greatest short story or poem or so, I could start and complete a piece right now. Now, of course, I could do that with regular. It has nothing to do with the machine. But I just somehow just feel, that whole writer's feel. And so many people don't, people don't know that feel if they've never used those big typewriters. This is not going to work here, Doc. I'm knocking that. Would you rate the quality? Well, it was very bad. Hello. Hello, doctor. Hello, doctor. Hello, doctor. Hello, doctor. Just keeps trying. Hello, doctor. I'm Frank Atollo. This is the man. I am the man whose name adorns the title of this show. I'm going to go over to Facebook. Twitter, at Frank Atollo, where you might get some information you don't want from me, because I use that for a couple of businesses. But you will get some gems of wisdom. And certainly as funny, if not funnier, than some of the Steve Martin, Gary Shandling, Albert Brooks, and all the smart aleck kids who actually sometimes are as funny as those guys. I have nothing. Nothing. You know he's going to call on the phone now. My modem mouth. What else did I say? Have you gone over to a, here it comes. This is it right now. We're going to put him on the speaker here. Hello? Hello? Now the phone doesn't work? What's that all? Hello? Hi, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. I'm going to have to do this by phone, I guess. Hear it?
Well, listen, I think I can fix my...
Your mic?
My microphone.
Uh-huh.
So keep talking to me for a second.
Okay. I mean, I don't mind. I can do it this way. It's a pain because I have to bend over as much as I have to, but I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just trying to talk into the mic at the same time. Look at this. We're going to have you on both things.
I'm going to call it. I'm trying to.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm on Skype, too. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
No, I don't hear you at all.
You can't hear me at all?
Not on Skype, no.
No?
You got a bum mic, I think.
Yeah, but I think I'm going to fix it in a minute.
Wow. See now, this is something you don't hear.
How's that?
Hey, is that you?
Yeah, is that it?
That's it. I'm turning off the phone. Hello?
How's that? Is that better?
Oh, that's 1,000 times better than the phone.
All right, buddy. Now we're in business.
Yeah, we did it.
Yeah, how's that?
That's good. It's we did it. Even though it's late, better late than never, right?
Right. Correct. Oh, listen, we do have to give a shout out to a mutual friend.
Go ahead,
Trish.
Is Trish listening?
She said she was going to listen.
Yeah, she probably. Yeah, but by now, she
probably hung up.
What kind of a show is this? These guys spend 2 hours getting connected, for God's sake. Jesus. Well, hi, Trish, and everyone else who's listening. We always have new friends and old friends. It's amazing how many people, some people who know me, a lot of people who know me don't listen because we talk here and there, and they go like, well, why on earth should I listen? I talk to you. I don't want to
hear it.
So, which is good because,
I'm one of the few friends that calls you.
That was an in-joke. Nobody got it. I got it. Okay, very good. Very funny, too. I was talking before.
Right.
About being high.
Right. I heard that.
Yeah.
I heard all that.
Well, then did you get...
I try to tell my students, you know, when I wrote my master's thesis, I had to type it on an IBM Selectric typewriter.
Oh, one of those ones I was talking about, too.
Right. And then when I had four readers, And so I took it to the first reader, and they would say, well, take this paragraph out on page 26. So then I had to type over everything from page 26 to 90.
Yep.
Right? And then I'd go to the second reader, and they'd say, take out this paragraph here on page, 37. So then I had to type everything over again. You know, people don't realize. I mean, now all I have to do is highlight it in Microsoft Word, delete it, and print it again.
Remember in those days, there were professional typists. There were people you would hire.
A dollar a page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? I miss the, lining out things and writing on top. You know, the whole proofreading thing and rewriting.
Right.
I liked that.
Yeah. I know. But I don't know. You know, we live in the type A world. We have to get it done quick. You know, but people nowadays, they don't have any idea what it's like to not use a word processor and use a typewriter.
Yeah, and I was talking about, do you remember the big iron ones I'm talking about? The IBM?
Yes, I still have one.
You still have an Underwood?
Down the basement, I have one that you have to hit the keys and the things in the middle pop up.
Yeah, yeah.
Onto the paper.
I wish I still had mine. I just once in a while, just to sit and...
You want mine?
Yeah. You know what the thing is? Where on earth would you get the ribbons for these things now?
You can't.
See?
Right, you can't. And how about the correcto type we used to use?
Yeah, those little white things used to stick it right where
right.
the...
Right.
Amazing. Well, you know, I think it was a great experience, but all of the stuff I was talking about had to do with analog, and when I was producing that show, with, you know, this gigantic board and oscillators and all sorts of things that, and noise, all the things that you had to put hands on. It was hands-on stuff. It wasn't just clicking a mouse and zeros and ones runner. You actually had to move and touch everything.
Right. You did. How about when you got to the very end of the paper and realized you had the paper in crooked? Remember? And you had to type the whole page over again because it was all crooked coming off the end of the page.
And you would do that even if you weren't high. That would just happen. Well, what did you think about what I said? We could talk, if you have some other things to talk about, we could talk.
There's just one thing I got to tell you.
Okay,
I'm still laughing because... You know what song I heard tonight? And it has one of the greatest lines in all of music.
Wow. Wow. Here's a critical, an editorial of lyricism.
I mean, your listeners won't remember this song, but you will.
Okay,
do you remember that song, Werewolf in London?
Now, it's odd that you should say that, because last week we talked about Warren Zevon. He was dead a year last week.
Oh, really? A year?
Yeah, and I was talking about how... I was talking about his courage in death and how I saw him on Letterman show. He was dying. He was weeks from dying, and he was still out there doing little things, everything he could possibly do. And he knew he was going to die.
Right.
And he knew for a long time. Of course, a day could be a long time if you know you're going to die.
Right.
So we were really applauding his courage there. But heard werewolves.
Did he die of cancer?
Yes. He had some kind of weird kind of throat lung cancer. It was some weird kind. I didn't even know that there are, you know, there are different, you know, I'm telling you, there are different kinds of various cancers. What, did I just say a Yogi Berra? That was a Yogi Berra, wasn't it?
Right. You know,
there are different kinds of various cancers.
Right.
What I mean is, you know, I don't know about type A's or B's, but, you know, you could get, you don't just get lung cancer. You get this kind and that kind. There's different kinds.
Yeah, I know. There's cancer of the throat, tongue, cheek.
No, but even they have subdivisions, I hear. Oh, and forget it. Anyway, so what about Werewolves of London? What was the line?
The line was when he says that he was sitting having a drinking pina coladas at Trader Dick's. I think that's what it was. And he says, and his hair was perfect.
And that's the end. That is a good line. And his hair was...
Isn't it?
Yes.
Can't you just picture the werewolf? You know, there was never a hair out of place.
His hair was perfect.
Right.
You know, speaking of that, if you think... We had a couple of years ago, we had on... God, now I forgot. I can't believe I forgot his name. the guy who did, the guy who won an Academy Award for doing the makeup in, I can't believe I forgot his name, in the Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
The guy who did the makeup won an Academy Award. He was on this show. And he was taught, he said one of his favorite, you know, he grew up in watching these old guys, this guy named Pierce, Jim Pierce or whatever his name was. He's the guy who did the original werewolf and wolfman makeup jobs in those old movies.
Right.
So that's the same thing as we're talking about here, you know what I mean?
Right.
He's had a lot, and you know, like us typing on a typewriter, and the guy was doing the hair on that Wolfman, the Lon right. Chaney Jr. Wolfman, that guy, it was, you know, it turned out to be kind of a mask. It didn't even move. You're right. It was like, it rained and it didn't look like it was wet. And it was.
Exactly.
It just, everything was in place.
It was perfect.
Because it didn't have that, they didn't have the ability to make the texture and the movement, and not like that other guy who also died of cancer, who had a million, the guy who did all the gorillas in the 80s and 90s. And think he died too. Or maybe Stan Winston died. Now I don't know. I'm going to have to look into the book of death and see. Where did we go wrong in this show? I want to know. We started, Dr. Popoli, I even lied about you.
You did?
Well, you have this.
You said I was the president of something. The
president of the International Behavioral Science Consortium in Warsaw, Poland.
What happened? I got a call from the president of the behavioral science, and he wanted to know who I was.
Yeah, who is this guy? Dr. Popoli is named after a famous the town in Italy.
It is a town in Italy, yes. Popoli.
Popoli. Right. As they say in New York, in Italy.
Right.
In Italy.
Right. I-T-L-Y.
Yeah.
Right.
But I was talking about, so the stuff about getting high.
Why do they call it getting high?
That's a darn good question. Why is the level of happiness high? Because, I don't know.
With happiness, I can see because it's referred to as euphoria.
Okay, well, that's why they say high when you get high, because you get happy.
Well, unless you're smoking marijuana and you're so paranoid you can't move.
There are other effects, sure. But right. Most people get high. Most people get a feeling of euphoria. And I can't for the life, and I just try to imagine now how I used to get high. I was like morning, noon, and night. It was high. I can't imagine now that there was a time in my life, and it was over a great many, it seemed like forever, this is not like 2 weeks out of my life. This was like my lifestyle for a while. And I'm trying to figure out how the hell I was able to function regular, like I said. I wasn't just sitting around stereotypical, you know, guy, the high guy just sitting around, hey, man. It wasn't happening that way. I was like,
but do you remember back when we were growing up, there were different drugs for each decade, you know, like the 60s, and then the 70s started, you know, the LSD and the hallucinogenics.
When the hallucinogenics started.
And the hash, you know, and then the 80s. Where the Quaaludes and the speed and so it was like all these different groups of drugs that became popular.
Well, you know, became popular. It's a matter of popularity because guys were popping pills. Guys were jazz musicians are like the real. They're the templates for getting high. Those guys were always getting high. It just wasn't. It didn't break through. The ilk. It didn't, it wasn't like common, but they were smoking, they were smoking dope back in the 20s and 30s, those guys.
Right.
And they were popping pills because they had to stay up all sorts of hours playing stuff and because they felt they played better. And let me tell you something, there were a couple of times I remember being high and I was doing a session, I was doing music, and I was doing a session and I, now you could be high and think you were doing great. And that's what people used to joke about. They used to say, like, you know, if you're going to do it, if you're going to be a songwriter or some kind of writer, and you write it while you're high and you think it's great because you're not really in touch, and then you read it when you're straight and you go, what the heck was I, what the hell is this? You know, that didn't happen to me. It never happened to me. I always had a very good relationship. See, I didn't need, I knew guys who just needed pounds of stuff, tons of pills, you know, millimeters, not millimeters, what are they called? What are they called? What do you get when you get a pill? You get 10 centimeters. You get 10, what do you get? Milligrams.
Guys
who needed, you know, quarts, hundreds of milligrams and stuff. I never needed that much. I needed just a little bit, and it got me over into craziness. I mean, I was just as crazy as anyone who took a lot, but I didn't need a lot because I must have been high energy to begin with. But I never wrote something or did something because I did this all in a creative lifestyle. I never did something, went back and went, what the hell is that? So it just had a strange effect on me altogether. But what I wanted to discuss was to take that aside, because I think I'm an anomaly. People do this, and people do things, and of course we're gonna put aside all the med stuff, because that's obviously, they're not doing it together. They're doing it to help balance some part of the brain. Is that
neurotransmitters?
Yeah, the neurotransmitters, man. It's a good name for a group.
It is.
And the neurotransmitters, man. I'm with the neurotransmitters. And,
right. Didn't you used to fill in for Wolfman Jack?
Fill in?
Yeah, didn't, like, you know, if he was worse or something, you would do the beginning.
No, never. I could never do that voice. Listen to me, for God's sake. I still sound like Mickey Mouse. Listen to my voice. It's like, at this age, who sounds like this at this age? I'm talking the other day to someone from MedEd, and this lady, and she goes, you know, she says, if you're old enough, you might qualify for some assistance. I said, really? So I tell her my age, and she went, you're kidding. She said, tell me your real age. She wouldn't even believe my real age.
Well, that's because everybody knows you lie all the time.
No, people I don't know, I don't lie. Okay, wait. You know what Hemingway said? What makes a great writer? A great liar. And that's what makes a great writer.
Well, Hemingway was the greatest, wasn't he?
That's what makes a great writer a great liar. All writers.
He's my favorite author of all
great,
time.
Great writers.
Besides Freud, that is.
Yeah. Or great lawyers. Well, Freud, you know, Freud wasn't a good writer, though. I mean, he wasn't a writer. Whatever he did, he wrote down. But, man, he's hard to read. Those books he wrote are hard to read. I think he should have given his thoughts to Hemingway, and he should have put them down.
Well, you know who did that? There's a rumor that the Russian psychologist Lev Vygotsky, he admitted to being such a terrible writer. So what he would do is he would lecture to his graduate students, and they would write it for him.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't do any writing for Freud, though.
No, you're too young. No. You're way too young. You're still too young.
He was just a couple years before me.
But what do you think about, look at this, we're already at the top of the second hour. I'm not going to break for stuff. We'll just talk because we got running here late. Let me just tell everyone again, this is Cthulhu Chronicles. It's February 7th. We're on our way through February. Y2K plus 13 already. Dr. Gary Popoli, who works at teaches at four different universities. Is it four?
Now it's four, yes.
Four different universities in four different states. No, it's not. It's all in one state, and it's a small state, we might add. So when he travels from one to the other, he doesn't have to take trains and planes.
Right.
And he doesn't go on tour, so you can't have him in your home at hometown. Although if you make him an offer, he may come and speak. You know,
yes, I would love to come speak if people make me an offer.
Now, if you make Gary Pope, if you'd like Gary Popoli to speak at your group, to speak for your group, to your class, to your organization, or maybe you have a special occasion, a dinner coming up, Gary Popoli will come to your place, just contact me, Frank Cotolo, because I book them, and of course I come along as his agent, and all we need is two first class ticket, round trip first class tickets, and a place to stay, and then the fee. Just write to me, fcotolo@yahoo.com, and we'll get you some work speaking, because this guy knows what he's talking about, and I introduce him, and that alone is worth the money.
It is.
So here you are at the top of the second hour. Now, listen,
you didn't say that we've only done two speaking engagements because we charge $450,000.
No, you know, it's not that much. But don't scare them away.
Okay.
Because this can happen. I mean, even I get paid. I get paid to talk at places. I mean, I go as a speaker myself. But you can get top dollar. I get like middle dollar. Actually, I get low dollar. Okay. But I do.
But let me ask you one question.
Oh, just one go.
Because you're a musician, and you have these big black things that sit behind you.
Those are my bodyguards. Those are my bodyguards.
You know, where the music comes out of.
No, I don't. There's nothing behind me.
And they're called
speakers. Yeah.
Right. But they don't do one bit of talking.
No, they don't. They talk through me.
Okay.
Is that, right. is that
you
the
want to play commercials and get some precious bodily fluids?
No, I want to tell everybody that not to be turned off by his humor, because when he shows up live, he doesn't do that kind of junk. He doesn't stand there and do stupid jokes. No, we're not going to do that. Let's just talk now because you wasted. So I didn't waste any time. You wasted so much time.
Okay, well it was my fault. But you know, I told you yesterday that we should have tried it out.
Yeah,
now
well,
I know what the problem is, and now I can take care of it.
That's okay, because
so
this
we'll
is
never have the problem again.
This is live radio, and people who listen to it when it's recorded still feel it's live because of things like that. We don't screw around. Now I was talking about this compulsion that people have to use stimulants to get into a state of mind that they feel they can't get into normally. Correct? Now are they trying to make up for something, or is this recreational, or is it at a psychological level? Are they trying to feel good for just no reason whatsoever because get away, escapism? What's the feeling about that in psychology?
Right. Well, first of all, what you're talking about is when people do drugs, alcohol, whatever, they enter an altered state of consciousness, which is exactly the same as hypnosis, meditation, sleep, you know, they all fall in the category of altered states of consciousness. Not now, obviously, if you drink too much alcohol and you become unconscious, that's different. But, so you enter this altered state of consciousness. Now, depending upon the drug, some of the drugs, cocaine, for example, is psychologically addicting. Not so much physically addicting, psychologically, because of the feeling of that euphoria and energy and people get addicted to that feeling. But when they try to go off of the cocaine, it's not so much withdrawal from the cocaine, it's this withdrawal from the psychological dependence of that feeling. But then something like, obviously, things like, you know, heroin and things like crack
physiologically.
Correct.
The body accepts them and says, hey, I'm used to this now. You better keep giving it to me.
Exactly.
So what
and what happens
is that go ahead.
Is that people do not realize the addictiveness of these drugs. And it's just, you know, the perfect example is smoking. You know, nicotine is a very addictive drug. So all it takes is, you know, you buy a pack of cigarettes either because of peer pressure or because you think you're going to try it or whatever. And then the next thing you know, when you're not smoking, you're starting to feel different. So you keep smoking again. You start having that nicotine withdrawal. So depending upon the drug, you know, physiologically and or psychologically, you become addicted to either the feeling or the actual drug. But the thing is this, sometimes I'll give an example where people who are depressed, for example, you know, they have an argument with their boyfriend or the girlfriend and they're depressed. And what do? They go to a bar and they drink alcohol, which is a depressant.
Yeah.
So you think that it's going to make you feel better. And actually, you're doing yourself a disservice. It's going to make you feel worse.
In a sense, isn't that like a cultural? It's almost like an urban legend thing.
Yes.
Right.
Well, you see it in movies all the time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's a pop culture thing.
To the bar, and you know, has a shot of they always have the same colored shot of whiskey in one of those big round glasses, and I think it's actually Diet Coke.
You know, not only that, but it's a great myth. That a person's drunk and you want to sober him up, you give him coffee. That's a myth.
That is a myth.
Yeah.
That is a myth. Yes, caffeine does not alleviate the effects of alcohol.
Maybe they thought, I don't know what they thought. Maybe they thought because alcohol is a depressant, that if they gave him a stimulant, which is caffeine, that would, is that what they thought?
Right, I guess.
Here's the other thing, too, that people used to take cocaine, used to have whiskey. Some kind of whiskey, bourbon, or scotch, and used to drink that, because they wanted to come down more slowly or something. It went along with it because you know that's a real fast and long, slippery slope of cocaine. That's the problem with it, is that you have to, in order to stay up there, you have to keep shooting it in there.
Right.
But what you're saying,
We've talked about adolescence and alcohol.
Yes.
So let me just reiterate real quick. Here's what happens with adolescence. When it comes to the physiological effects of alcohol, adolescents are much more tolerant of alcohol than adults are. And what I mean by that is they're still intoxicated, but they don't show the signs that adults show. So, for example, you and I drink enough to become intoxicated, and an adolescent drinks the same amount.
Uh-huh.
They won't be groggy, slurring their words, having a difficult time walking a straight line like you and I will.
Uh-huh.
And then what that does is it enhances the amount of alcohol that they drink because they don't feel as though they're intoxicated, which is why adolescents have a problem with blacking out from taking too much alcohol.
Uh-huh.
Because they don't realize the effects of the alcohol. They don't feel as though they're intoxicated, so they keep drinking, and then the next thing is they black out.
The thing that fascinates me is the being addicted to a feeling, the psychological addiction. Do you think, for instance, when I was talking about, you know, being high and doing all this work? Hello? Did you fall?
Yeah.
Did you fall? When I was talking about getting high and being high while I'm doing my work and everything, was I actually addicted to that state? I wasn't addicted to the drug, but I was addicted to that state while living that lifestyle. It became such a part of it that I was addicted to that?
Yes. And what I think happens is if you would go to work not in that state, then it starts to create a state of anxiety and a state of apprehension, and then you think that you're going to mess up.
And you do.
Too hyper, and so then when you go in that state.
But then you would, actually. You would be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You would screw up because you would be so out of touch with
obviously how much you take.
Well, if you're morning, noon, and night high. I told you
that kind of wraps it up.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I told you what we, and I don't know if you heard that much, or you're still fixing your microphone, but I swear to you, if I didn't have to work late and I didn't have to write, because I would have to go home and write, and of course I'd get high, but we'd go home after dinner. If dinner was out, you'd go out for dinner, come back to your house or somebody else's apartment, usually my own apartment, maybe a friend would come over or someone, and we'd put in a tape. At the time we had videotapes, you know,
right.
And yeah, I don't mean to tell you about these machines, but anyway, in order to relax, we get high. It's like really stupid, isn't it? That's really stupid because...
Well, that's the myth, right? That's the myth.
Yeah.
The myth is that taking the drugs will relax you.
But meanwhile, it's the same drugs we were taking to do the serious work.
Right.
So that had to be some kind of weird psychological...
addiction.
Yeah, addiction. It was also giving the stimulant it was making it, in one hand, it's making a performance enhancer, but that was a lie. It was making it a performance enhancer because I gave it that quality, and then it changed qualities to a relaxant because I gave it that quality. Correct?
Correct.
That's amazing that we could do these things to ourselves.
And how about the fact that people didn't recognize you unless you were high? How's that?
Well, you know, I told you.
Where's yourself tonight, Frank? What's the matter?
I said, no. No, you don't understand. And I said this, maybe I didn't make myself perfectly clear. And that is that you could do this and you could do it openly because everybody was high. I mean, it was not, so nobody knew what, you almost didn't know what the person was, because it was like when he wasn't high. Because you were high, because they were high. My assistant was high, the secretary was high, the person who came in was high, the person who delivered the tapes were, everybody was high. Everybody was high, Gary, doctor.
Euphoria.
Nuts. Best. And people who came into the office area who weren't high, like the UPS man or the FedEx man, they would leave high just from breathing the darn stuff. And they would go back.
They were delivering.
Listen, the UPS man told us once. No, he actually told us once because he delivered there every day and he'd stay longer, have a cup of coffee. But he told us every day. He told us once. He said, you know, every morning I come in to the headquarters and I look at my route. And I'm like, last week I complained. I went, hey, where's audio stimulation? I got to go there. Why am I not delivering? He was actually watching the coffee. What a sick world. Huh? It's crazy, crazy, wacky, crazy out there. Anyway, so the idea of, I like that. I like that. I like that. And I hope everyone learns something from that. The idea that there is a psychological addiction. Now, give me another site. Aren't there other psych? Let's talk about psychological addictions for a second, because they should be easily handled once you're aware. Correct? Isn't awareness the first step?
Awareness. It's perception. Perception is the awareness of a sensation.
So how do you know? So, I mean, somebody, how do you know if you're psychologically, let's not talk about physiologically.
We call it dependency.
Okay.
We call it.
All right.
Dependency means you're physically and or psychologically.
Okay, and or. Okay, but I want to just talk about the psychological thing. What are some other things? Food? Is food psychological?
Yes. In fact, you know that people who have these bariatric bypass surgeries.
Yes, I know. I have a relative who had that, yes.
Okay, well, they have to go through, you know, so many sessions of psychological counseling prior to doing that, so that psychologically they're prepared for not only the surgery, but hopefully for losing all of the weight and changing body image and having to come back for repeat surgeries to remove the excess skin and so forth. So it's a huge psychological a factor in weight loss. You know, the other thing too is there are people who argue that the reason people are either overweight, poor body image, these types of things. Obviously, it can be genetic and it can be physiological in terms of, you know, you could have thyroid problems and, you know, so forth. But there's also some people who believe that people get very heavy so that they don't have to deal with the stressors of day-to-day life, such as dating, going out to dances, going to the prom. So it's this deep-rooted psychological feeling as to, fear, basically. So they become they become obese and overweight. That it's a psychological thing.
So the
it's a way. It's their way of not having to deal with all the other stressors of life.
Eating would the trying to fill this emptiness they have, which they can't face. They can't fill this emptiness, which is fear of what? A fear of love, fear of relationship, fear of intimacy.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
So they use food, and they act, and that's amazing too. Because what they do is they put on a real mask. I mean, and a real costume, their body.
Well, exactly. Right.
And they feel.
See, now you're getting. You know, I'm proud of you. You're really getting. You know, a little Freudian now. You know.
Thank you. I you know,
that's
I've always
duty right there.
I've always been a little bit, and now I'm. You know, now and
isn't
I like
that redundant. Isn't that redundant?
A little bit. What?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. Right. I've always been some. You're right. I think a little bit is a stupid phrase, and we're going to wipe
it. It's redundant, right? Because aren't bits little?
Yeah, a bit.
You know what one of my students said the other day?
You're right. You know, I'm always commenting on that stuff, and I just said a little bit. Thank you for bringing that up. Go ahead.
You know what one of my students said the other day when I said it isn't a bit little? She said it depends on the size of the horse's mouth. That's what she said. I thought that was pretty good.
She's a smarty, that one.
Yeah.
But I'm constantly telling. I mean, the redundancies that go on. I feel like calling. Sometimes I email newscasters. I find out their email because I can't believe the people who are writing the copy for that is incredibly
illiterate.
Illiterate, I guess, is the word because, you know, it's just the grammar, to hell with grammar.
Right.
Redundancy, why do people, you know, I did a whole show on, and you know, I think I've talked to you about this too, and I'm not going to bring it up again and make a thing about it, okay? But I just say that when they talk about tornadic, I'm like, it drives me nuts. Tornadic activity. And someone said it because they thought it was a word, and then everybody started saying it because they went like, hey, I didn't know that word. And it's not a word. And it's stupid.
Listen.
And they do it all the time. It's like I call up and go, give me, you know, and I actually talked to a weatherman, and I said, you know, I heard that down in Florida they have hurricanic activity. He said, what? Hurricanic activity in Florida. Did you hear about – how come you didn't report on that? He goes, what the hell is hurricanic? And he looks at me like I'm a jerk. If a volcano is rumbling, is it volcanic? Is it volcanic activity? I mean, it's stupid. Isn't it stupid? And then people, oh, hey, where'd you get that word? Okay, so, but, you know, it's true. They do it, not just weathermen, because, you know, I mean, weathermen are one step above, you know, sports writers who are like, I know that's, who are like the bottom rung of journalists. The bottom rung.
Do you write anything?
What? Yeah, journalism, I'm on the bottom of the bottom rung, but that's a whole other story.
Right. But all right, let me give you a statistic here. You know,
I want to hear one.
This is from a study that was done in Britain.
Let's do it. Come on.
The new figures suggest 9 in every 100 men and 4 in every 100 women show signs of alcohol dependence.
Now, if we go to the math and replace that with odds, it's really gigantic. But so 4 in 100 is not,
and 4%.
Four is not. Yeah, that's percent, but not in odds. What? 4% of women are
4%, right?
4% of women are alcoholics.
Well, alcohol dependence.
Okay, now define that. How? In other words,
again, that means you're physically and psychologically addicted.
But does that mean you're always drinking?
Yes, you feel compelled to drink
always.
Yeah,
doesn't matter time of day or night.
Right. Right.
Okay, because pop culture has really driven us. If you've seen two key movies to watch about alcohol dependency, one of them from the early 40s, Ray Milland's Academy Award-winning performance in The Lost Weekend, there's one. And the other one, of course, which is a beautiful movie, really not about alcohol, but about love, is The Days of Wine and Roses, Jack Lemmon and Lee Remick wonderful. Those are two essential movies about psychological dependency. And what they do is that they show that psychological dependency, having to have this, feeling you need this, debilitates your life. It is never, ever, heightens it. Here we go with high again. Unless you're me and you're producing a show. No, but that's alcohol. I'm just talking alcohol. Right?
I don't want to get onto the movie thing, but I always tease my wife that we're going to watch Blue Velvet. Now, have you seen that movie,
Blue Velvet? What does that have to do with alcohol? Why are you going down a rabbit hole, man?
Wasn't he addicted to drugs?
Oh, now it's drugs. We were talking alcohol.
Yeah. Okay, well, alcohol is a drug.
All right, okay. I don't remember Blue Velvet that well then. I'm sorry.
You know, with Dennis Hopper, and he had to take the laughing gas and...
I don't remember that so well.
All right. Okay. That's okay.
I don't remember.
Listen to this. Here's another thing I have for you.
What was that, 9%? In other words, there were more men who were dependent. That's
right,
it?
Right. Twice as many.
Well, yeah, a little more than twice. Go.
Right. Illicit drug use has been shown to have systematic relations. This is a study done by Flora and Chasson. This was just released.
Boy, we haven't heard from them in a while. Mention them like we know. Like we know.
This was released in 2005.
Okay. Here's another one of those Florham and Chasson things. Come on over, listen to this one. It's Florham and Chasson. How do I know them?
You always have to give the authors otherwise it'd be.
And I appreciate that, but you always say it like we should know.
Flora and Chasson.
Yeah, Flora and Chasson. I worked with them in Buffalo at the Springfield Theater. Go ahead.
It said peak use for illicit drug use. Occurs during emerging adulthood, which, by the way, is the newest...
There's a phrase.
Yes, the newest phrase in human development.
Emerging
adulthood.
Oh, wow, I love this.
In a second.
So you're not... So in other words, you're not legally... You're not 18 or 21, what?
Well, because...
Emerging, what does that mean?
Most the old human development books used to have, infancy, childhood, adolescence, adulthood. But actually, between 18 and 25, 18 and 27 or whatever, it's really emerging adulthood because all the changes that will not be permanent until you become an adult somewhere around 28, 29, which actually refers to the development of the prefrontal cortex. So prior to that, you're emerging adulthood.
Wow.
You don't become an adult just because adolescence ends at, say, 19 doesn't mean at 20 you become an adult. So now what they've done is they've replaced that period in between adolescence and adulthood, basically, say, 18 to 30, as emerging adulthood. But anyway, it says it peaks during emerging adulthood and declines after the mid-20s, with a cessation of drug use typically occurring before age 30.
Okay.
Now, and that corresponds with, hopefully, the development of the prefrontal cortex, where you start to make sound decisions right around the age of 29.
29, you make sound decisions at 29?
Yes.
Before,
that's when your prefrontal cortex has been fully developed.
Now, when you say sound divisions... You know, I was thinking,
decisions.
I just said divisions.
Divisions.
Sound decisions. No,
this
listen.
This isn't math class.
I know. I wanted, it's all math. But here's what I wanted to say, because someone said to me the other day, was talking about somebody who passed away, and they said, at one point he made a poor decision, and he did something. Right. It doesn't matter. It was something. Doesn't matter what it was. But he said, and I'm thinking to myself, he had made a bad choice. People used to say this all the time. And I'm going, well, how do you know? How did they know? I mean, even everything's kind of risky. But how do people know? What are there certain things? In other words, are they making a bad choice? How old are they now? Do they fit into these categories you're talking about? Because how do they know it's a bad choice? Maybe they're prefrontal lobotomy. Their prefrontal
cortex.
Maybe they haven't
developed.
Yeah, how do you know they made a bad decision? They don't know they're making a bad choice.
Their brain is really not capable of making sound decisions.
There you go. That's what I'm saying.
That doesn't mean that they're unintelligent or that they're stupid. It's just, you know, first of all, adolescents have a tendency anyway to start off at very young ages to make risky decisions, you know, and engage in risky behavior. Mm. And that comes from the fact that they have what's called adolescent egocentrism, where they believe they're immune to the laws of mortality and morbidity. So they start making risky decisions and engaging in risky behavior. But what happens is then all of a sudden you turn 29, 30, you look back, and some of these things are haunting you. But for example, the topless picture that you put on Facebook, or the...
You saw that?
The text message that you sent out when you were high.
Oh, okay.
Or the, you know, all these things that are, you know, we consider them poor decisions, you know, poor choices. You don't have to do that. You shouldn't do that.
Wait a second. So you're saying there is something wrong with putting a bare-chested picture of yourself on the... You know, before there was the internet, though, then we're talking about you're really talking about stuff that's, well, it's okay. It's based on these times, you know, but back in the old days when people say made a bad choice, would be like, you know, the people you hung out, you felt you should hang out with these people who turned out to be, you know.
Or he walked in front of a train.
Well, I mean, I know someone who walked in front of a train, but
that's a bad choice.
But he was drunk, and for some reason or another, he felt that, and he was right. He felt that would end it. Now, that's not a bad choice. Now, it's a bad choice for everybody, but if you wanted to end it, it was a good choice, because that'll do it right away.
Right, that will.
So what I'm saying is that idea of making a bad choice as if somebody is responsible for always knowing the bad or the good choice, and that's never the case, whether your cortex is not true.
However, let's just put it this way.
Uh-huh.
You're at a much greater risk of making a poor choice prior to the age of 30 than you are after.
Now, I'd like to see statistics on that.
All right.
Is there a study that says before the prefrontal cortex is developed, you know, 85% of the people involved in this age group had made stupid decisions. I'll call them bad. I'll call them stupid decisions because their pre-cortex amphitalamin wasn't ready to be developed, and they knew it. I mean, they didn't know it. Where are those statistics?
All right. Well, here's what I'm going to do for
Doctor.
You. I have something on here on the maturation of the prefrontal cortex.
Okay.
And it says that the prefrontal cortex is one of the last regions of the brain to reach maturation. It says...
You couldn't say maturity. Why did they say maturation? Why don't they say maturity? Why did they use maturation? I'm looking this word up. I've never heard the word maturation.
Maturation is the automatic unfolding of development.
Oh, yeah, right. And it only takes place when there's volcanic activity. Maturation. Where did that... Go ahead. You just go on with what you're talking about. I'm looking up maturation.
And so anyway, it says...
It reaches maturity.
This article says that the brain region gives an individual the capacity to exercise good judgment when presented with difficult life situations. Brain research indicating that brain development is not complete until near the end of age 25, this one says, refers specifically to the development of the prefrontal cortex.
It is a word, by the way. I'm wrong.
But of course it's a word. You didn't think that I would use it if it wasn't a word, did you?
Well, for all I know, you're talking to people about tornadic.
Let me tell you what some
of the
things.
Maybe you're talking about tornadic. I don't know if you're talking about tornadic activity.
I was talking about hurricane.
I would have said maturity. But go ahead.
Here are some of the what's quote, and this is from
bad decision.
This is from the Office of Population Affairs,
okay,
Health and Human Services.
Okay.
Okay. So, because I don't want people to think I'm,
no.
You know,
no, they know. You teach at four universities. They know that qualifies you. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, but I'm reading this from some. So here's what the executive functions of the prefrontal cortex include: focusing attention, organizing thoughts and problem solving, foreseeing and weighing possible consequences of behavior, considering the future and making predictions, forming strategies and planning, ability to balance short-term rewards with long-term goals.
Wow, this is...
This is heavy, isn't it?
Yeah, shifting because some of this...
adjusting behavior when situations change. Impulse control and delay of gratification. Modulation of intense emotions. Inhibiting inappropriate behavior. And simultaneously considering multiple streams of information when faced with complex and challenging information.
Now, some of this stuff is related to Freud. Some of this stuff is really control of the id, isn't it? Because, I mean, what you're talking about...
That's the impulse control.
Yeah.
There's
stuff that takes care of the... That puts the id under control. And is that the... And the stuff that puts the ego under control. That's a superego, right?
But the ego is what has to you know, keep the id under control.
Yes, and that has to do with the cortex then.
Right. Yes. Now you want to ask, well, how do we know this?
See, I asked.
MRIs. We do MRIs of adolescent brains versus adult brains, and you'll notice that the teen and adolescent brains have much less white matter,
wow,
which is actually the myelin sheath that covers the axon of the neurons.
That covers the axon. I love this.
The neurons to work more efficiently.
So there's so much of this. This sounds so
less myelin.
Listen to me.
And then as you get older, you get more and more and more myelin sheath, and your axons are firing more efficiently.
Efficient firing axons. This is something we strive for from the beginning. I remember my mother saying to me, "Listen, son, you're young now, but when your efficient actions are firing, you know, you won't need this meatloaf anymore. Your action. Holy Christmas! Say that again. What is it? What is firing your actons?
The axons.
Axons.
Of your neurons.
The axons of your neurons when you are firing.
Because of myelin.
Can color all your dreams and help you filing. So,
for example, let me give you an example.
This is why young people
with an immature prefrontal cortex, even if teens understand that something is dangerous, they may still go ahead and engage in the risky behavior.
Because the cortex doesn't say, now hold on a second, Claude.
Right, because the cortex, it says here, teens who take risks in relatively safe situations exercise the circuitry and develop the skills to, quote, put on the brakes in more dangerous situations.
Now, you know, they didn't know a lot of this stuff. I talked a couple of weeks ago and...
You didn't know this when you were a teen.
No, because this is what I'm going to say to you. I'm going to say to you this because I've said this on a previous show and other previous shows when I talked about growing up. And that is my mother would tell my mother during parents' days, you know, she'd come up and talk to them and this is not a joke. This is the truth. It is funny, but it's my life. I know, so I'm sorry about that, okay? But they used to say, they didn't know about these actons, and I'm glad they didn't. My mother would have never known what they were talking about. She would have went home and she would have said, you know, they think they read the same comic books as you, Frankie, because they're talking about things from outer space. But they didn't do that because they considered me, they said, you know, your son is, your son takes risks. He doesn't batten down the hatchets. He is an underachiever.
The hatchets?
They're not Indians. They're Native Americans. He is an underachiever, and he takes risks. In other words, what they were saying was that I was normal. They didn't know it, though.
Right.
They didn't know it. They wanted me.
Your prefrontal cortex was not yet formed.
And they expected, and this is true. Now, wait a second, because we're taking an entire couple of generations. Okay, and we're putting them on trial for this because this is true, especially in parochial school and then at a lesser degree in public school. They were expecting behavior that they could not possibly get.
Right.
And that is a shame. No wonder, this is no wonder so many of us, and I include myself too, although I didn't wind up as bad as some people in my generation wound up. But this is why so many people in this my generation, your generation, I don't know, you're not that much younger, but this is why those people wound up in therapy, why they wound up in bad relationship after bad relationship. And the teachers would say, like, that's because they weren't right. And I'm like, who was right? Who was okay? No one. We were all normal, being nuts. And they were trying to make us...
unnormal.
You're trying to make us behave like them when we couldn't. If only someone had known this and would have sat there and said, look, my cortex is not...
Right.
You know? Listen.
Frankie's cortex is not yet formed.
Could you imagine my mother said... I'm going to write a story about that. Anyway, my mother... That would be a great little short story and say, listen, teacher, I really, with all due respect, if his frontal cortex was developed, you know, what? We wouldn't be having this talk. And then the teacher, what is she talking about? Then they'd think she was nuts. Wow. That's right. Amazing.
And isn't that amazing?
Especially since.
So again, now we're going to get back to the drug and the alcohol.
Yeah, but there's, wait a second. Before you go there, wait. There's repression and suppression involved in this, because the people, the kids, the underdeveloped cortexes don't know how else to behave. They have to corrupt their natural development in order to follow the rules.
Right.
That's nuts.
And now here's what makes it worse.
Well, good.
Here's what makes it worse. When they become adolescents, their parents start giving them more and more and more rope, when in fact they should be giving them less and less and less rope, because you should know that they're going to be making risky decisions because of lack of the development of the prefrontal cortex.
Now, when you're saying parents, you're also saying, I mean, that would be all the authority figures, teachers.
Correct. Yes.
That's right.
That's when you really have to keep an eye on that.
This really puts a bad light, not that we need any more of a bad light on certain religions that have their problems in areas of youths, but it puts a very bad light on the moral teachings, or teaching people to be a perfectly moral and godlike at a time when it's destructive to do that. It wouldn't that be, isn't that destructive? Doesn't that, like you said, well, doesn't that give them the rope? Doesn't that light the fire? Because I always used to say, oh, don't tell him what not to do, because he'll just want to do it more. Doesn't it just light the fire?
Yeah. Now,
go on.
It's a very sensitive topic, I know. But you know, there's been a lot in the news lately about the priest abuse of children, especially in Los Angeles. You know, they just released 12,000 pages of documentation these priests.
Okay, did that come from the Vatican? Because you know, it's already been that case. We're not going to go into this as a topic.
We're not.
But you know, it goes right to everybody knows it, and it's been going on for years.
Well, it went to Bishop Ratzinger.
Yes,
who was the repository for all of these cases.
So you read that book, or you heard about that guy who wrote that book then? That's a book out that tells all this stuff.
You're correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Ratzinger was appointed to do all that by Pope John Paul.
The second, correct. And then he became the current pope, obviously, as you know.
Right.
Right. Okay, but anyway.
Yeah.
My point with this is,
yeah,
combine, you know, priests were always revered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could do no wrong. We put them on pedestals. And so when you combine that with children who do not have, a fully mature prefrontal cortex, and with someone who in their eyes can do no wrong, when they approach them, they're very apt to give in to them.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it risky behavior, but it's also behavior that, according to them, is coming from someone who can do no wrong, when in fact they were doing tremendous amount wrong.
In that book also, I saw the guy in an interview. He said that the best place, and if those people who were dealing with their specific problem of having to, you know, pedophilia,
right,
whatever it is they felt they had to do, and they would go where they knew they were protected. And that's why a lot of these people became priests.
Yeah, he was on the Bill Maher show.
Yes. Yeah, okay. So we saw the same interview. Fine.
Right.
But here's it. So here's, and that's really, you can imagine how these kids are screwed up then, because here they are learning stuff and that has to do with behavior, that is religious, moral based stuff, that has that has dogma and doctrines and rules and everything at the same time. At the same time, this is going on. And they're, wow, that is like, I mean, listen, right, you might as well just toss these kids out the window. I mean, they'd probably do less harm if you throw them out the window.
Right. And you know what? And again, and I tell my students this because, you know, I am a firm believer that we need to protect our children.
Yeah.
And, you know, the president has said that multiple times in some of his statements. But, you know, if you have a building, if you start removing bricks from the bottom of the building, eventually it's going to fall. So you know, if we do not protect the young children who are the building blocks of the next generation, it's just going to be 10 times worse.
Okay, but you're saying that, and I agree with you with that, but what I'm saying is this stuff that they're finding out now makes it more possible. It now actually makes it possible to be able to see those things. Entire generations went without that guy, and we grew up, you could talk about that with my generation.
Right.
You could say, well, we didn't have any of this stuff. So what we got through, we're okay. I mean, we're okay.
Well, we're in a way. Okay until you realize that, you know, every
we're not okay. We're doomed.
In the country is overcrowded, and the rate of pedophilia and the rate of child abuse and that comes from this generation. It's astronomical. So
well, you know, but we don't know this though. We can't do comparisons that go back to like 1812, can we? I mean, we could say pedophilia or any kind
yeah,
of
we know back
any
then
kind of any
pedophilia existed.
We know, and yes, we know these things existed, and it still existed. By the way, in the church, this goes way back, of course.
Correct.
Remember, there was a time when there were two churches, there were two popes. I mean, it was madness what they did to nuns. It was madness, total madness that they got.
I didn't know any nun.
I knew one who flew a flying nun. Hey, talk about getting high. How did she do it? But seriously, and I'm always serious when I say this, the thing is that now all this stuff is really, I mean, you're saying protect. That was always the case, though, the generation. So, I mean, the building has not crumbled yet. That is, mankind hasn't really crumbled.
We hope.
Well, we know it hasn't crumbled yet.
But
we can't compare pedophilia now and 1718.
No. I'm not talking about just a specific thing like that. I have seen it, and I believe that I'm not the only one who has witnessed it. That the younger generation, I'm talking about the 18, 19, 20 year old generation. They have big problems. And I mean, you know...
Are you saying bigger problems, though? Because, I mean, every generation has big problems.
In terms of, I believe that a higher, much higher percentage of that population has problems much compared to other generations.
So is it taking their cortex longer to develop?
Well,
that's a good question, isn't it?
Well, it could be, but see, this is only the intellectual part of it that we know is going on.
Oh, yeah.
But as a result of that, you don't know what has happened to these children prior to 18. And so if they are in a situation, if they're vulnerable at those early ages and people do not protect them, then they grow up having more problems. And so I think that, and I don't have the statistics in front of me to back it up, but I believe that the prevalence of mental illness with the younger generations is much, much higher than it was when you and I were young.
Hmm. Okay.
And they're much more medicated. They're much more socially inept. They're much more liberal in terms of their outward overt behaviors,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the whole sexuality issue. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, we have things now that you and I never even could think of when we were growing up, like, you know, the transgenders and the transsexuals and the hermaphrodites and the, you know,
there were always those people. We don't even know how many of those people made up that community because the morals and the cultural and the society made them do it behind closed doors.
Right, exactly. But you didn't. They weren't allowed to get married in public. They weren't allowed to raise children.
So what are you saying? What are you saying, that these cultural freedom, the cultural openness, is not good?
What are you saying? I don't
know what you're saying.
I'm not trying to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, heavy-duty conservative.
So I don't understand what you're saying then. But these people, these kids are growing up with this out in the open.
It's a factor that we don't have enough research.
Gotcha.
To tell us what some of the consequences are going to be, if any.
But as well as I do that the consequences of what happened when, let's say, and you could read books and see movies about this now that you could never see before, but there were children who grew up with a propensity to be attracted to the same sex in our times, and
right.
They kept it very secret because there were actually, I knew, you know, people would actually, kids would actually beat them up. I mean, this was a dangerous thing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Imagine a person like that, and back then you had to keep it secret, and they were miserable, and they were depressed, and they were, now they've gone through that, and now they're passing that on. Now, if you believe that, you know, some of these traits are passed on, you know, genetically to the next generation, and then, you know, it's kind of like if you have 10,000 white fish and you introduce two black fish, well, eventually you're going to have more and more zebra fish.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I'm just using this analogy that if you have mental illness and it's breeding and breeding and breeding and breeding, you're going to have more and more and more and more prevalence of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not judging those people. You know, I'm a psychologist. I would do anything to help them. But we won't know until we start doing all this research as to what these things have actually, the toll that they've taken on these younger generations.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're starting to see it.
In what way?
They're more medicated. They're more socially inept.
You're saying they're more, but this is the first time, this is the first couple of generations that this stuff is all out in the open. If they could have medicated them back then if they had the medications.
Right. But what I'm saying is, you and I walk down the street. You pass me, I pass you, we make eye contact. We're probably going to say hi to one another. Right? Say, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
All right. Today, two 18-year-olds walking down the hall make eye contact. They look at each other. They look down, walk past each other. And so with all of the technology, with all of the the passing on of what could be degenerative genes, medications, split families. Just divorce, for example. Back when you and I were going, it was like taboo. Very few people got divorced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's, you get married, the things aren't working out, you get divorced. And meanwhile, you have children, who now you have this whole pool of children who come from divorced families.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to be different than the research done years ago when most children came from intact families. And then you have, the children nowadays with all of the technology. You know, my students, I tell them that I'm not allowed to see their cell phones.
Right.
It creates a state of panic for them.
Yes, because they have
to sit there for an hour, an hour and 15 minutes, and not get on their cell phone.
It's...
you can see them. It's like they're going through withdrawal.
Well, it's an appendage now. It's not even a...
They can't stand it.
Yeah.
So they're different.
Right. But, okay. I see what you're saying. And we all realize that all of the... technology has a way of putting itself in that situation for a generation too. Because remember, the kids who grew up with covered wagons, they couldn't understand the kids who were driving cars. I mean, they were, you know, there was whatever the technology, however it progresses and gets better, it affects the generation before and after. But you're saying, so in other words, I don't know what too much right now can be, and you don't know either. You're saying we'll do studies and we'll find
out. Right, right.
We'll find out what's going on.
Did you have, growing up, did you have a red tractor that you used to pedal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know why they weren't black and yellow and green. They were all red. They were red.
Yeah, they were red tractors. Right. Yeah, I had one too. Yeah, I remember. I had one.
Kids don't even do that. Do they do that anymore? Do they have little cars and things that they pedal?
Most of them nowadays are motorized, though. You know, that you plug them in and it recharges them, and then they can press the gas pedal and it, you know, it's motorized.
Yeah, yeah, and that's...
They don't pedal too much. I mean, they pedal their bikes still, but, you know.
I just think it's bad. And I use the word bad because I mean the word bad, for people to judge people, I think you'll agree with me, judge younger people because of their growing up in a certain environment that the parent...
It depends on the generation, I think.
Or the generation. That's a bad thing because you know, you grew up in your generation and you settled and absorbed all the things in your generation.
Right.
And you tend to think that's better for some reason. To make a quality judgment of that is really strange to me. It's unfair to a kid, because a kid doesn't ask what generation to be born. He grows up and this is my generation. What do you want from me? Right?
And here's what I tell my students. Here's what I tell them. Most, and I mean most, adolescents are good people. No matter what they wear, no matter how they wear their hair, no matter what their shoes look like, they are good people. And again, there's a small percentage who may be completely socially inept or whatever, but they're good people. And what happens is, I think that some of the older generations are hasty to judge them just by their appearance.
Sure, sure.
And that's unfair.
And I think one of the good things that has been passed on, or at least a concept that has grown with generations, is a matter of acceptance, which was not present, when I was growing up. Because I grew up in a junior high school where there were race riots. They bust in black kids, and you know, they bust in black kids. Today, you're in a school, and this one's black, this one's Chinese, you know? It's like the neighborhoods are filled, and people just accept it. They don't say, the Chinese guy lives next to me. You know, where are those? It's good that we're getting rid of those kind of people. Even though there are many of them still around, I'm not saying, you know, but I think that that's becoming such a strong consciousness. The consciousness of acceptance is becoming so strong that I think this is a wave that has shown itself. This is why political parties, one in particular, doesn't understand what their philosophy, why their philosophy isn't working.
Right.
See, because that,
exactly.
And it has nothing to do with
it. They're out of touch.
Yeah, they're out of touch. They just don't get what's going on out there. And you can't hold on to these. You can't build a brand new bridge with the same tools you used to build the Brooklyn Bridge. It just can't be done.
Right.
So what we're seeing, I think, and please tell me if I'm wrong, or I'm just thinking through this, because even before the last presidential election, I argued with a conservative friend of mine, and I said, look, this has very little to do with the message. I don't care what you're thinking, and he's an older person. I'm saying, because, you know, what's happening out there is so different. It's so new. It's just so open that they can't, any little thing is that that doesn't have to do with acceptance is going to affect that candidate, right?
Yes.
Who did they ever talk about women the way they talked about now? They like the freedoms of women, of things, of immigrants. Of I mean, this is a big thing going on, and hopefully it'll spread into lands where there are despots, and guys like those North Korean people will finally stand up and get out there and just like roll over those jerks. You know, I mean, it's got to happen. I don't know what the result of all that could be. I know it's not utopia because there is no such thing. But I think
is
this
that, is that a country in Africa?
It's Uganda.
No, it's Ethiopia.
Oh, Ethiopia. I thought that's what you did when you kill somebody. You give them gas. Don't you Ethiopianize them?
No, that's when you're talking about the younger generation in Russia. That it's called euthanasia.
I knew that one was coming. It's me, Frank Cotolo. We haven't told you that you've been listening to Cotolo Chronicles, and you are for the next few minutes also, and not too many more minutes. Dr. Gary Popoli always comes here at least once a month, and we talk about these things, and I hope you're all better off for it. Not from what I say, because I just speculate. He actually reads this junk and sits down and studies it, and he teaches at 4 universities. He's also the president of the United Galaxy Corporation, which takes homeless children and develops their cortex before they're 15. It's a wonderful program.
How come in the whole time that we've been speaking, you haven't mentioned the neo-postmodernism? Yeah, how come you haven't?
I don't know.
That?
It didn't come up.
Well, that's my favorite word, you know.
Neo-postmodern, because you are it. You don't know. We're all neo-postmodernists. I know he's like he laughs. You know why he laughs? He laughs. That's one of those laughs of like what a dope, right? Because I mean this theory makes sense.
You know.
And I'll tell you about it.
I called you the other day.
What did you call me? That's the question.
To pay you a compliment.
Yes, you did, and I appreciate it very much.
Because I don't know how many of your
I don't know either
listeners know that you are an unbelievable writer, but you write a column, which we won't go into the whole thing, and I read it, and I called you to tell you that I laughed so hard at what you had written for such a long period of time that I haven't laughed that hard and that long in a very long time. It was one of the best articles on sports that I had ever read. Really.
Well, thank you. And I think that's why people should follow me on Twitter at Frank Cotolo. Are you on Twitter yet? Do you have an account yet?
No, I don't know how to spell it.
Hey,
phone doesn't even get the internet.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't have, your money. If I had the money that you have.
I guess. Who is that?
That's Cotolo over there. You know what I mean?
That's Cotolo over there. I got to get rolling here, bud.
Right. Okay, buddy.
I'm glad you got yourself fixed. You fixed your mic and we're all okay. And
next time it'll be perfect.
We will be talking to you again one way or another. Thank you.
Okay, Frank. See ya.
Good night.
All right.
There he goes. Whip, 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 Dr. Gary Popoli. My name is Frank Cotolo, man whose name joins the title of the show, and the show is rapidly coming to an endless Y2K plus 13. Don't forget, go to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com. Check where you can listen to it again if there's stuff you missed and stuff you want to write down. Write it down. Go listen to it again. The stations are great, and this program has has a long shelf life. Let's use that phrase. Until next time, this is the Bard of Broadcasting. That's right. It's me, the poet laureate of alternative broadcasting. And I'll be with you again next time. Keep looking at the blog to find out who's going to be on. And don't forget, in 2 weeks, maybe we're going to get Tom Savino on here, too. It's going to be great. In the meantime, good night, Mrs. Erstwhile, wherever you are. And thank you, Dr. Popoli, again, for coming here and talking. As for talking, I'm leaving because I had nothing more to say.